Players dressed in the very distinctive green tracksuits of Nigeria are mingling in this busy hotel lobby in leafy Surrey, just south of London, mingling with fans and officials. They're here preparing for a friendly game against Scotland ahead of the 2014 World Cup finals. I'm Jane Garvey. Welcome to the managers on the BBC World Service. I'm here today to meet the final subject in our series, the man who's leading Nigeria in Brazil, their manager, Stephen Keshi. Now, the Nigerian build-up to this World Cup has not been the smoothest. That's if you believe some of the headlines. Mr. Keshi's constantly on the verge of being fired, we're told, or on the verge of resigning because of a fractious relationship with the Nigerian Football Federation. But he's also been called the best coach ever in Nigeria's footballing history. They call him the Big Boss. As a player, he played in Belgium and in France, but he's now back home leading his national team as manager. He led that team to victory in the African Nations Cup just last year, one of only two people to lift that trophy as a player and as a coach. In the World Cup, Nigeria are going to play Iran, Bosnia-Herzegovina and Argentina. And I'm really keen to hear how a coach moulds a group of players from all over the world into a squad ready for the World Cup finals. I wonder if you could start actually by just telling us how excited you are about the World Cup. Is it the biggest thing in your career so far?
Well, thank you. Biggest thing, it has to be, because it's the ultimate. It's the biggest tournament in the world. I mean, when it comes to a football player's life or a manager. And it's more exciting because the atmosphere in the camp with the boys is just, it's giving another direction of what is going to happen in Brazil. So
they're excited?
Yeah, exactly. They're very excited. So
what about when you were a little boy? What was your earliest World Cup memory?
As a little boy, I never dreamt of playing World Cup. I know I would love to play football. I had some few players in my head, you know, as a young boy growing up, that if I want to be a football player, these are the guys, they're like idols to me that I would like to emulate. And
who were they?
One of them was late Bobby Moore, in the England captain.
Wrong about them, Bobby Moore. Tom Muller is coming. Just hit it going all the way to go, and Moore stops it. What a player this fellow is.
And the one is Franz Beckenbauer, the Kaiser.
Yeah.
And there's another one in Nigeria, Christian Chukwu, we call him Chairman. And eventually, with my group, my fellow friends, they end up calling me Bobby Moore when I was a teenage player, you know. And these are the guys that really inspired me to play football. And of course, besides my older brothers that were also football players, but they never lived up to playing to their level because of family, whatever, back home.
You mentioned your older brothers. How many did you have?
I have about four of them.
Right. And you all played together?
Oh, they were much older than me. I just run between their legs, you know, kick the ball and just go crazy. But they were very fine players. But, you know, then back home, then you're not really given the opportunity to play because they don't see you getting anything out of football, you know. It's not the right thing to do. They want to go to school. Our culture back there was become a lawyer, a doctor, an accountant, whatever.
Well, when we had Jürgen Klinsmann on this program, his dad wanted him to become a baker before he had anything to do with football.
So exactly.
What did your family say to you?
Just go to school. You can become anything you want to become, but you have to go to school.
Did they try to stop you playing football?
Oh, yeah, several times. You get home, you've been whipped a little bit for playing football. But now every parent in Africa, in Nigeria, want their kid to play football. It's crazy.
Because of the amount of money they could make if they make it?
I don't know if it's because of the money, but the kids these days, they just love football. They want to play football. Maybe the money might be secondary, but with all this media and everybody, every kid is into football, and mostly in Africa wants to play football.
Did your parents make it easy for you to play? Did they give you money for sports stuff?
No. I had to take my mom's money to buy football. There's a ball we call rubber ball back in Nigeria. So when she's, I ask for the money, can I have some money, mom? No, if I give you, you won't eat. You go and buy ball. And she knows. The way she turns her back, I take the money and go buy a ball.
Let's get this straight. You stole from your own mom.
No, I did not steal. I take the money. She knows I'm going to take. What, Jane, how can you say that?
Well, because it's true, Steve. No. I've got kids. I'd be horrified if they stole.
So I just take the money. I go buy the ball and go play. So.
And when was the first time that you realized that you could earn money from this, that you were seriously good at football?
I guess when I was playing, we used to have what you call local competitions where you have clubs, just local clubs and all the stuff. We go in there, after playing, you see the manager or the owner of the team gives you some change for transportation and everything. And you're happy because you just finished playing football that you love to play. And now they give you some money, little money to just take your transportation. And when I started playing the junior national team, I was still in school. And I said, wait a minute, maybe if I'm more serious with this stuff, I might get me some money, And then I started putting everything I had into it. Was difficult because my parents didn't want me to play. But I have to lie to them that, yes, I'm not. I would never play football because I don't even like that game anymore. So I'm in school. But I thought that I'll go to practice section with my club and also play in the junior national team. But they got to know because they saw me on TV.
And so they spotted you.
Hey, yeah. That is, who is that? Who is that number four?
So, I mean, they are proud of you.
They were proud. My older brothers, told my dad, let him play. He's good at it. You've stopped us from playing, but him, I think is having fun with it. We just saw him on TV. He's playing for Nigeria junior team. They didn't know about this because I never told them. If I tell my dad then, there's no way he's going to drag me out of the camp. So I just lied that I'm in school. I was in school, though. But I come in, practice with the team, and go back. Since then, I realized, there might be money coming from this beautiful game that I love so much.
Was there ever a time when your dad said to you, I am really proud of you, and I love watching you play?
Yes, there was a moment or a game that he came. In fact, his own brother dragged him to the stadium because his brother comes to watch me play. And I would say, Uncle, please don't tell Daddy. If you tell him, I'm done. He said, no, I won't tell him, don't worry. So I was playing for my school. My school is one of the popular schools in Lagos, in Nigeria. And he said, well, I'll come watch your game. And he came, they both came, he brought my dad. And the way to this field is, you got to cross some of the crowd and walk into the pitch. And on my way coming out from the dressing room, somehow I looked on my right side, looked up, and I saw this guy. This looks like my dad. What? I felt like going down the hole oh, shoot, what is he doing here? First 15 minutes, my leg was trembling because I know this is the last game I'm going to play. No more game. And I was so angry on the field to my uncle. How can you do that? You promised me. But guess what? After the game, we won. We played good. And he goes, you lied to me. Yes, sir. Why would you lie to me? I said. I didn't say anything. But by the way, you played good. You played good. Congratulations. I like it. But that wasn't the real day. The real day was when he was sick. He went to the clinic. He write your name and the reason why you want to see a doctor. And the doctor knows Stephen Keshi as a football player. And he goes, who is Frederick Cash here? And he should be way behind on the line.
Yeah.
But the doctor came by and said, Frederick Cash, it's me. Come inside, please.
So he got good treatment because of you.
The first 10, 20 minutes, they were talking about me. My dad was looking like, hey, I didn't come here for this. I came to get He got a nice treatment, and, you know, he didn't have to pay for that. I didn't know about this until I came home, and he was asking me, how is football? I said, what? Football? I said, I've stopped playing. No. You can't stop playing now. No, you are playing good. I said, what is going on here? You know, since then, the gate just went open, and, you know, I started enjoying my game.
So you were still a young lad, really,
yeah,
at this
sure.
stage. What kind of coaching were you getting?
Just basic coaching. You know, we didn't have that, you know, where you have the fundamental training in football, you know, controlling, passing, doing all the stuff. We learned those by playing on the street. We learned ball technique on the street. Nobody taught you that. It just, and I'm not sure if I had any training, real training program that this is how to move the ball, control. It just came naturally because we were playing unconditioned football on the street.
And what about when you started playing in Nigeria? What about the standard of coaching then?
The standard of coaching was good, but the thing is, if you don't have it when you're much younger on the street, it becomes difficult for you because when you get to the club level, they want to believe that you should by now know how, you know the fundamental of whatever it is. And from there, if you have it, that's it. They work more on tactical play, you know, technical, not that much because they just believe that you have it. And of course, the unity of the team, the atmosphere of the team, they try to bring the bond together for the team. And
team spirit was important.
Correct, team spirit, yeah. You can use that too.
When you went to play in Europe, it's a big question, but what sort of differences did you notice in coaching terms?
Before I went to Europe, I went through Cote d'Ivoire. I played in Cote d'Ivoire, studied yeah. Abidjan, you know, for about 7 months. I didn't stay long there, and the owner of the team said, no, you can't stay here anymore, you have to go. Your football level is higher than this. And
did you think he was right? Had you already begun to think that?
No, I wasn't prepared to go to Europe. In fact, I wasn't ready to go to Europe. And I wasn't ready to leave Nigeria. Mm. But circumstances made me to leave Nigeria. And then I moved to Cote d'Ivoire. And I said, I just want to play a little while, maybe 1 year, and go back to Nigeria and continue with my team. Because my team in Nigeria, I was the captain. You know, all along, any team I play for, I'm always the captain. So,
why are you always the captain?
I don't know. Somehow, I don't know.
No, this is not about modesty.
I'm serious. I don't know.
Well, you were the big boss, weren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Is that the title you gave yourself, or is it a title?
No, the title came from the media. It came from the fans. They just think Keshi wants perfection from his teammates. He wants everything to be done right. And because I kind of direct, you know, a little bit on the field of play, take this position, boss, big boss. And I said, who's big boss? When I first said big boss, I looked behind me and said, who are you talking to? You're the boss in the team. And
but, I mean, it's interesting. Say, there's a difference between players who take responsibility and players who don't. And clearly you were a player who did take responsibility.
I hate to lose.
You hate to lose? Well, nobody wants to lose.
I know sometimes we're going to lose, but I hate to lose. If it's something that I can avoid, I will surely do that. But, you know, in this game, you will lose sometimes and win sometimes. But I try to give everything that I have not to lose.
Standard domine territorialement. Le Sporting va assommer la défense liégeoise par ce but superbe de Stéphane Keshi. Keshi y voit ici encore un signe du ciel.
Making that jump then from Nigeria to the Ivory Coast and then over to Western Europe, what were the differences you noticed, if any actually, in the quality of coaching in those various locations?
The difference was huge, though. I can tell you that. When I got to Lokeren, you know, we do, because I wanted to get much better, I wanted to see myself in the first 11. I was working more with the assistant coach, the reserve coach. When I finished with the first team, I would go to him and say, hey, I need you to take me for the next 20 minutes. I want to work on this, or what do you think? And work with me, finishing, some free kick and all those stuff. And the tactical play was more visible, more detailed, you know, versus when I was in Africa then. When I moved to Anderlecht, it becomes more, you could say simple, because the way they lay everything out. And this is a very big team we're talking about then. And they have you have the opportunity to, you know, talk one-on-one with the coach. And he tells you, this is what I'm expecting from you. This is what I think you can become if you go through this route and all the stuff. And I'm very inquisitive. I like to ask questions. I like to know things. And I talk to my coaches all the time.
And were you bringing these sorts of experiences back when you went to play for Nigeria? Did you?
Yeah, these are the things. When I went back to Nigeria, I realized that as a captain, and I want to win, I want to make Nigeria a very strong squad in the national team. I started helping out some of the Nigerian players to Europe so they can get more experience. They can know the value of being a professional player, the discipline side of it that, you know, might be lacking in Nigerian football then and the national team. So a lot of us were going out, you know, and then we started coming back with knowledge that we've been getting from our teams to the national team, and the team begins to grow. Hmm.
So how do you feel when you, as you must do now as a manager, when you come across a player who doesn't seem as committed as you obviously still are?
We talk one-on-one, let them realize, you know, this is a great, great opportunity. This is something that you cannot buy. You have this chance to set up your life, your career, and you just have to, you know, tune in that commitment level and responsibility, because that's what's going to take you further in this career. And you make them, you know, there are ways you talk to some of these kids. You might raise your voice, tune your voice a little bit for them to understand. You might lower your voice a little bit. It depends on the character of the person you're talking with, and they take it from there.
When you went to play in France and in Belgium, how did your coaches and managers treat you?
Was good. My first team in Europe was Lokeren in Belgium. It was a very difficult moment. Then we were very few Africans in Belgium. You know, they talk about racism now. This is no time for racism. Then it was worse. Then, you know, you go out, they don't want to see you, you know.
This is the 1980s?
Middle 80s, yeah. And it was very, very difficult.
So what kind of life were you able to live then?
You see, whatever I am today, whatever I become today, is by the grace of my wife and God. Because I almost left. Because we were two that went from Ivory Coast to Belgium. The other guy left. He said, I can't take it anymore. This is crazy. He left, and I said to my wife, we're going to go. And my wife said, no. You must prove yourself. You've shown Africans that you can play football. You're one of the best in Nigeria, one of the best in Africa. You have 2 years contract. Show it here. Let me see if you can do it.
And you did. But it's actually it's depressing for those of us who have followed football for a long time. This is within living memory that back in the 1980s, in Europe, your life was made pretty much a misery. And
it was very tough. The first year was, it was difficult to get something to buy in the store. That's how bad it is. You walk into a fruit store, you touch an orange or something, same guy will take the orange and put it in the trash can. And sometimes he just closes the door on you before you get to the door. was bad. You know, I said, wow, we can't live like this. If I was left alone, I would have gone back to Nigeria or Cote d'Ivoire.
So you describe what it was like when you'd go out shopping. What about when you were playing? What was the atmosphere like at the grounds?
When I was playing, it was the same thing, you know. The ball is out of play and you want to go pick the ball up. You hear people crying, doing those monkey stuff. Some are throwing banana to you. And what I do, I just pretend as if I didn't see it. I didn't hear anything. I continue my play. But what I decided was that I will win this cause with love. I will win this cause by giving them good football. And when I started playing real good football, these guys started coming, you know, flogging to me that, wow, we're sorry.
Whilst you were playing in Europe, you were still playing for Nigeria as well.
Yeah, I was still Nigerian captain, yeah.
And with Nigeria, Nigeria won the African Cup of Nations in 1994.
Correct.
You didn't play in that final, but you did collect the trophy, didn't you?
Yes.
Off go the Nigerian players to celebrate. A sign emblazoned throughout the continent. The 19th championship has been won by Nigeria.
The first game I played, 30 minutes of play, I had a muscle tear, whatever they call it, and I couldn't play anymore in the tournament. I thought I could be back in the semi-final against Cote d'Ivoire, but I only played for about 15 minutes. That was it. In the final, there was no way I could play. And when we won the trophy, my coach, then Clement Tresorov, said, you will have to go up there and lift the cup. It is your time. It's your cup.
And there is the handsome trophy. It's going to be handed over to Uchenna Okafor, captain of the night, unless they allow their great, long-lasting captain, Stephen Keshi, to come up and take it, who's on the bench. He was troubled by a thigh injury. Up go the Nigerian players, delighted with themselves.
The fact that you've done it, you've been there, that gives you real credibility with your players in the Nigerian squad now, I would imagine. They've got to respect you, haven't they?
You see, respect is by mutual. If I don't respect them, they don't care if I've won World Cup 10 times. You've got to respect everybody. So I give them what is due to them, and I think they're doing the same thing back to me.
Stephen, thank you very much for that. It's fascinating stuff so far. Much more to talk to you about the way your coaching developed and indeed the passion you have for the Nigerian national side as we start the very first days of what's going to be a really thrilling World Cup, I'm sure. We'll come back to you on the BBC World Service after the latest news.
Documentaries on the BBC World Service.
My first company had been opened when I was 22 and first bank when I was 27.
Wealthy Russians are coming to London, settling in the capital's most exclusive neighborhoods.
I like the location of the building because I wanted to live in some London style.
And a whole industry has grown up in the city to meet their needs.
Russians require high maintenance because your client, she doesn't want to wait for an hour because in an hour she will be probably flying to another country on a private jet.
With getting their children into a top private school, high on the list.
People like the children to integrate. They would like them to become westernized.
I'm Olga Betko, and I'll be joining Russia's business elites at work and at play to find out what attracts them to London.
London is much more comfortable, of course.
Moscow on Thames. Online from Wednesday at bbcworldservice.com.
Welcome back to The Managers here on the BBC World Service. I'm Jane Garvey and I'm just outside London to meet the big boss, the manager of Nigeria, Stephen Keshi. In the second half of our conversation, I want to find out much more about how, as a coach, he prepares a squad for a World Cup, his views on selecting players who are applying their trade outside Nigeria, and also the idea of European coaches managing African teams. That's all after the latest BBC news headlines.
BBC News with Marion Marshall. The US Defence Secretary Chuck Hagel has ordered an aircraft carrier to move into the Gulf. A Pentagon official said this was to provide President Obama with flexibility, should military options be required, to protect American lives and interests in Iraq. The Prime Minister of Iraq, Nouri al-Maliki, has addressed his commanders in the city of Samarra, north of Baghdad, the front line in the fight against Islamist insurgents. The President of Iran, Hassan Rouhani, says his country is prepared to cooperate with the United States to fight the insurgents in Iraq if Iran saw that Washington was confronting what he called terrorist groups. More than 130 of Iran's Revolutionary Guards are reported to have arrived in Iraq to provide training and advice. NATO has released satellite images, backing up existing video material, which strongly support claims that three Russian tanks crossed into Ukraine this week, claims that Moscow has strenuously denied. 49 Ukrainian military personnel were killed today when pro-Russian separatists shot down a transport aircraft. At least 10 migrants drowned off the Libyan coast after an overloaded inflatable boat capsized, attempting to cross to the Italian island of Lampedusa. The Italian Navy rescued 39 people, but dozens more are feared dead. The United Nations has appealed for $1 billion to help victims of the civil war in South Sudan. The UN's top aid official there says 7 million people are at risk of hunger or disease. Officials in Afghanistan say nearly 50 people were killed in militant attacks during the runoff election for a new president. The Independent Election Commission said more than 7 million Afghans voted in the poll. Israeli troops are conducting house-to-house searches in and around the city of Hebron to find three missing teenagers. One is believed to have called the authorities to say he'd been kidnapped. BBC News.
I'm Jane Garvey. Welcome back to the managers here on the BBC World Service. We're meeting some of the most successful coaches in world sport. And today I'm just outside London at the team hotel of the Nigerian World Cup squad. We're with the final subject in our series where we meet some of the most successful coaches in world sport. Today it's the turn of the manager of Nigeria's football team, Stephen Keshi. We've already heard about how his career began in secret, as his parents didn't approve of playing football. And he told us too about the terrible racism he suffered when his career took him to Europe. I really want to know how that has shaped him as a coach. He's already had huge success with the Super Eagles, winning the African Cup of Nations last year. But repeating that in Brazil is surely too much to hope for. Stephen, from what you've said, that they called you the big boss, you were a manager in waiting, basically. It was bound to happen to you at some point. Is that the way you thought about it yourself?
No. Never thought to be a manager, never thought to be a coach. But somehow I found myself in this position, you know. When I left football, I said, that's it. I've had enough. Let me think of doing something else. And I went back to school. But meanwhile, my daughter's school, the elementary school, they were looking for a coach. So the principal, like, announced it, that, hey, we're looking for a coach. If you guys know anybody that is a coach, a soccer coach, please let him see me in my office. And she ran home and said, Dad, I think you need to be our coach. I said, no. Yes. She goes, I said, no. Yes. I said, why? I'm not a coach. Oh, no, but you play professionally in Europe. Oh, yes. I said, yeah, that's true. Being a player and being a coach is two different things. So, oh, but these are little kids. They are my age mate.
How 12. Old was she? 12.
She was 12, 13. So, just whatever you teach them, they will take it. You know, this is my daughter speaking. I said, oh, no. I'm not into it. No. But I thought that was it. She went back to school, went to the principal's office, and gave the principal my number and said, my dad used to be a professional player. Maybe you want to call him because he doesn't want to come. So he called me. I said, hey, yeah, that's true. I play professionally, but I'm not a coach. Oh, no, you can help. Just help the kids. Somehow I found myself in the school. And we started working with the kids, and I was reborn again because I left football for a while. And when I started working with these kids, 13, 12-year-old kids, another life came into me, and and the kids were having fun. That was just a breaking point. They were having fun, enjoying their game, and they started doing very well in school. And that was it. I said, wow, okay, if I can make a difference in this kid's life, I will do it. And that's how I go back to coaching, and you know, went for coaching course, and I was called back to Nigeria, you know, to assist Bonfrey Joe. That was 1999, before the Cup of Nations 2000, Nigeria and Ghana, and that was it. And since then, I've been back to football.
But you coached other sides as well as Nigeria as your current job. But before that, who else did you coach?
Before that, I was coaching the team I was playing for in the United States. They call it Sacramento Scorpions. We're playing. We don't have the major league game then. This was the highest of the league in U.S., the A-League, they call it the A-League. I was a player coach. And I was just fooling around as a coach, but I'm not even sure if I know what I was doing, but I was just, you know, but it was going good because we were winning and playing good football, you know, attractive football. So those, you know, these are where I started coaching, and then I went to Malaysia where I played for Perlis, and also help out in coaching when the coach is not around. Okay, you can take up the coaching, you know, for today.
You've come a long way, though, haven't you, from fooling around, as you put it, in Sacramento, to getting Nigeria to the World Cup finals. This is a very, very different job you have now.
It is, it is.
Is it still fun?
Yes. Oh, it's good you ask this question. The day we stop to be fun, that's the same day I'll leave.
But it's the expectation that you're dealing with, isn't it? I mean, what's it like back in Nigeria now? People must be really excited about this.
They are. You know, Nigerians have gone through a period of times that the national team was not doing so well. So they lost all hope. And Nigerians, they love their national team. They love Super Eagles. And for the Super Eagles not to do well, it kills them, you know. And somehow they were not seeing any light coming from anywhere. And we got there 2 years ago with my crew. It wasn't easy because since we've been with the national team, we've not experienced Christmas or New Year with our families because we're always there working, making sure that we need to keep this team going because we need to be where we want to be. You know, so
your time at Nigeria, though, has not been without controversy of all sorts of different kinds, I know. One of your decisions was not to play players playing outside Nigeria, which some people felt was controversial because you yourself had played, as we've discussed, outside Nigeria. Why did you make that decision?
Well, I think charity begins at home. And I'm a product of local base player. And so many of us, maybe 90% of Nigerian great players started from home. And I worked in Togo before when I took Togo to World Cup 2006. Most of my players, they are all local players that I, you know, used. Very few from Europe. And I was in Mali also. Most of them also, they are local players. And I know Nigeria having 150, 60 million people, there is no way I cannot find 20 players, local players, good enough to play for national team. And I said, this is where I'm going to start from. And there are so many good players, but they've been denied the opportunity to play because they're not professionals. I mean, foreign-based professionals. They're professionals in their own country, but we don't see any good from them.
But you have changed your mind, haven't you? Because Peter Odemwingie is back, for his one example. He's back for he's in the squad anyway for the World Cup.
But Peter is a very good player. He's a good professional player. The footballistic side of Peter is, I can't question it. But playing for a team is not just playing football. There are a lot of ingredients that come with it that you need to use in helping the other teammates, the team, to grow and become successful. So if you don't have the rest of it, it creates a problem in the team, and that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a team player. I'm looking for a disciplined player. We'll say most of the best players are indisciplined players, but if you can give me what I need, the team needs, I don't want you to, if you see me in the morning, you don't want to say hi to me, that's your problem. But the team, say hi to the team, because this is the same team we are fighting for. So this is, you know, and it's been like that.
It's your relationship with your bosses has always been slightly difficult, hasn't it? It seems that you, I mean, is that fair?
No, the thing is, we, the media, sometimes they blow this out of proportion sometimes. Most of the thing that they probably say, the big boss said, is not true, because most of the time I don't even say anything. But there's somehow it comes to the newspaper, oh, okay, she said this, and maybe my office, my boss would just be angry, how can you say this? And even if I want to explain to him, I did not say what, it becomes difficult, you know.
Because he's already seen it in the paper.
Because already I've seen it in the paper, but otherwise we're in good rapport.
But it is true, isn't it, that you have expressed in public your, you're not keen on the idea of European bosses running African football teams, are you?
But first, the coach of Nigeria, Stephen Keshi, has accused Africa's football federations of destroying the game on the continent by relying on white European coaches to lead their national teams. Keshi, who played 64 times for Nigeria, previously coached Togo and Mali. But having secured Togo's unlikely qualification for the 2006 World Cup, he was promptly replaced by the German coach, Otto Fichter, prior to the tournament. Keshi has told World Football how he wants African teams to have more faith in African coaches.
I would love to see a lot of my African brothers in different countries coaching their national team, you know, bringing mostly the ones that played in Europe, bringing that European experience that they had back into the African system would be awesome. Again, the biggest problem that I think is the federations in Africa. What I said is, in Africa, we have great talents in Africa. When I was playing for Nigeria, I had great foreign coaches that developed me. You know,
and you acknowledge that?
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I developed a lot of us from Nigeria. And I'm saying, if they want to bring any European coach, let it be a quality European coach that will develop African kids, because we need to develop these kids. We don't need them to be stagnant. We need them to, you know, become somebody in life and become good citizens and become good for their families. And if you have to go out there because this European coach, he can, theoretically, he can do you everything, he can say anything, and you think he's a magician, and you bring him down, he's not doing anything, then we're not gaining, we're losing. He's the one gaining all these stuff. So I don't have a problem with a foreign coach coming in, but bring me a quality coach, I will take it. I can work with any foreign coach, there's no problem. But I must be able to learn something from him versus me teaching him something to do when I know he's a mediocre coach, he's not even a coach.
But he happens to be European.
He happens to be European. Why would I have to have that in my cabinet or around me? But if I have a coach that I know is a seasoned coach, sure, why not? I want to develop. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not against them, but I need somebody who's going to come in and help African kids, help other Nigerian coaches or African coaches to develop. Okay? The last one. If we address green
He got to be green. I don't want to see green, white, green, white. Which color of your own? Why are you laughing now? which color? That sky.
How do you go about bringing a quite disparate group of players together and making them into a team that suits you and your style?
You know, Jane, this is a wonderful question you're asking. It's not that easy. People think it's easy. A lot of people think coaching is a very easy thing to do. There's a lot into it. Bringing these different characters of adults, men, successful guys in different clubs and all this stuff, it's tough. And that's why you, when it comes to this level, you must be good at psychology, you know, knowing how to talk to them, bringing them close, and, you know, they need to have your trust. So bringing them together, I need to let them feel me, intimacy, that this is what I want from you, and I think you're the one to provide it. And we, you know, we talk. And once they nod their head, okay, coach, that's it. But there's also a fine line. You can't go beyond this line. I am God when it comes to this team. You cannot pass this line. This is it. And so, once you let them know about this, that is it. We need to carry the same momentum, the same focusness, the same desire into the game on Saturday. But you need to start from today. They don't cause us tire. These people, they come here up and down. Nobody like us here, forget to. We'll be African champion. Some of them never still believe, say we'll be African champion. So we need to prove to them again on Saturday, say we'll be truly African champion.
But what if there's a player in the team who was like you when you were a player, the big boss? How do you deal with them?
I would love that. Because when I was a player, all I want is success. All I want is to help the other players grow.
You never questioned the coach when you were a player?
I don't need to question the coach because he is the coach. He tells us what to do, and I go out there and do what he wants us to do and probably add more from my side, and that's it. I never question my coach, never. The only thing that I ask my coach, what is it that I'm doing wrong? And sometimes I say, oh, no, you're doing fine. No, don't worry about it. You're okay. And that's it. But question him on tactical play, on this, why this player's play? No. I don't do that. It's not my duty. My duty is to go out there as a captain, guide the players, try to win the game, and everybody's happy.
Do you ever sense with a player that they might be saying one thing to your face and then something else behind your back? I mean, do you get...
Well, up to this second, I've not observed that. I've not noticed that. But it could happen. I'm not my player's coach. I want to know them in total. I want them to know me. And I always speak the truth with them. I never tell them lie. What I'm going to say behind you is what I'm going to say in front of you.
Yeah.
So you will know me. You know, so they've come to know who Keshi is. I'm just as plain as my palm. So, because I know as a football player, when I was playing, if any official tells me a lie, I would never believe him anymore. I would not even want to see him anymore because
well,
I
did
know,
anybody lie to you?
When I was playing? A few times, yeah. It's in the national team, but I don't want to talk about that. But, you know, with my own thing is I'm not going to lie to anybody. I will just speak the truth. And sometimes it's very difficult when you speak the truth. But that's me.
So nobody in the current squad would survive in the squad if they were to question your tactics?
They might, because we have to talk.
So it's the way they do it?
Yeah, we have to dialogue. We have to say this is the reason. And if, honestly, their reason is better than mine, I'll go with what they have. It's for the success of the team. If I speak with you now and I find that your reasons are much better than what I have, I'll go with yours. As long as we win. As long as there's success, as long as everybody's happy, I'm happy.
But the player has got to feel that they are safe to challenge your opinions.
Well, they have to, they know that. They know that, they talk to me, coach, do you think this is right? I said, well, this is the reason I'm doing this. What do you guys think? And sometimes you have to let them talk. You have to let them take the decision. And the burden is going to be on them. And because they now they know, we just took this, we decided this stuff, so we have to give everything. So it makes you lay back a little bit, and you cannot singularly be the man only that is going to decide what is going on in the team. You have to collaborate with your staff, that my assistant coaches, and from my players. We talk, we interact, and tell me, guys, what do you guys see? What do you think we can do next that is going to make us look better out there? Because sometimes they feel it. They know what we can do, and then we just decide, okay, I think your idea is better. Let's go with it.
But psychologically, you have to be one step ahead of the players every time.
Yeah. All the time.
And you think you are?
All the time.
And what's the last thing you're going to say to your players before they go out to play Iran?
Last thing, be themselves. But be focused. Enjoy the game.
And
it's
win.
It's time to dance, a beautiful dance. Go and have fun. That's it.
Well, let's put that to the test then. We've been speaking to one of the Nigerian squad, Effie Ambrose, who plays for Celtic. Effie, Stephen says that if a player has a good idea, frankly, an idea better than one of his ideas, that's okay, and he'll go with what the player says. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I have to say, I wasn't sure I believed him.
No, it's true.
Give me an example of what might happen.
Yeah, because sometimes once we're in the team meeting before a game, you need to ask for opinion, because sometimes, as you know, they say in Africa, two heads are better than one.
Right.
So when you get different ideas, so you come up with the best.
And Stephen told me that he treats players as individuals, that every player is different, every person is different. Some players need to be shouted at a bit, other players need encouragement in a more gentle way. Is that right?
Yeah, because sometimes, yeah, he's right, because all of us are different. Someone needs to be shouted to bring him back to himself. Someone when you shout on him, it makes him nervous and he loses his composure.
What kind of a reputation does Stephen Keshi have?
Well, as a person, I think, and as players in the highest level, the most important thing, I think, for his reputation, he always told us, is discipline first. And that's first thing first. You have to be disciplined.
And do you respect him?
Yeah, very much, because for us to play with under someone that has played in the highest level, captain the country for so many years, and you have opportunity to play under him, it's a great achievement. So I'm going to give him all the respect and name because of not just being a coach, but the reputation and what he has put into football.
He said to me that before you play Iran, he's just going to tell you to go out and dance, enjoy yourself.
Yeah, he always tell us this because he never put pressure on it on all the players. He always tell us when we go out to the pitch.
What's it like when he praises you?
Well, once he praises you, you know that you've really done something that lifts the team up. But it's very difficult for the coach to just come and praise you. He praises the team because we are a team, not just individual. But sometimes it could be in your best moment to help the team. And when you've done that, after the game, he can tell you, give you a big handshake to tell you you left the team. But at the same time, he never praises the individual. He always tell the team, yeah, you've played well. But once you don't play well, he will tell you, despite you won the game, he will tell you, this is not us. Even despite we won, this is not how we play. So he always tell you to do better.
What would be a good tournament for Nigeria? Obviously, winning the World Cup. But what would you settle for in this tournament?
Winning the World Cup.
I answered my own question. I wish I hadn't bothered. No, I mean, let's talk about the last time Nigeria played in the World Cup. Didn't win a game. You weren't in charge, so I can say that to you.
Yeah.
I mean, you should beat Iran. You should beat Bosnia. Might get a draw with Argentina. I'm writing all your results. Well, you don't need to play the game, so I've told you what's happening. What, have you fantasized about what might happen?
Not
really. Do you allow yourself to do that?
No, because I like to take game by game.
Oh, they all say that.
Yeah, but that's how I am. I don't like speculation. I don't want to give myself reason to be upbeat for no reason. You know, I work with my players, let them know what is coming ahead of time, and then take it from there, game by game, until I get to the end of the tournament, which is 13th of July.
Yes. But, I mean, are you under colossal pressure at this moment as we anticipate the World Cup, which means so much to so many millions of people? We know that.
You know what? We talk about pressure all the time. There's pressure all over the place. There's pressure in the air, there's pressure where you eat, there's pressure where you sleep, there's pressure all over the place. So there's pressure in your work. I don't want to deal with that. If I want to deal with pressure, I want to deal with the pressure with my players. How to convince them this is what is best for us to do. This is the training that I think is good for us to do. And then they talk back to me, you know, we exchange words and all the stuff, you know, interact with each other. This kind of pressure, yes, I don't mind. But outside influence pressure, I don't want to do it. He might come, stays here, and go back.
So you have been quoted as saying that there are quite a few other jobs that you are being lined up for. Are you already thinking about what you're going to do after this?
No, I never said anything like that.
Is this something else that you've been misquoted?
I think so, yeah. I never said, there was never a time I said, oh, I have some places I have to go, and no, this is my job for now, and I will have to give 200% to what I'm doing, because I love, not only because it's my country, but I love the job. Football is me, it's what I love doing, it's probably the only thing I know how best to do for now, and I'm not going to be thinking elsewhere while I have a job to do here. Now, that is going to be out of professionalism. You're going to be professional in what you do.
Are we going to enjoy watching Nigeria at this World Cup?
I pray so.
Stephen, thank you so much. That was really interesting. Obviously, I hope you lose in the final of the World Cup to England. We're going to win probably 3 or 4-0. And yes, I am delusional. really interesting to meet you and hear all your thoughts on the game. Have a brilliant tournament. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's nice talking to you. Thank you.
The Managers was presented by me, Jane Garvey, and made in association with the Open University. It was produced for the BBC World Service by Richard McElroy. If you'd like to find out more about the business of football, go to the Sports Managers programme page on the World Service website and follow the links to the Open University.